This is the Broadly Focused Podcast, bringing you grown-up conversations about political, human rights and civil rights news items as they relate to religion and atheism. We're giving you fair warning now, subject matter and language are uncensored. If you are prone to taking offence, take a hike. Here are your hosts, Matt and Brian.
Hello and welcome to the Broadly Focused Podcast. This week our topics are Mustafa Drive to the Stars, North Carolina wins the stupidest state competition for now, The Rabbi, the Diamonds, and the Prophecy. Brian's topic of interest for the week is Bain's Free Library and Teaching Guides, and mine is the Mars One Settlement Project. So how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you?
I'm doing good. You know, first day of the new job today.
And so you should be in a happy mood. You're working.
Yeah. Yeah. The training is pretty dull in the beginning, but I think we're through the crap stuff and onto the
training is always dull.
How I do my job stuff. We'll see. I got at least another like 3-4 days of it. So.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I find unless it's a technical training, than general office, you know, policy and, you know, binder type issues. It's just going to be, 4 days of this. Kill me now.
Yeah.
Let me know when it's done.
Well, the first...
Can I take a test now?
The first half of the day was pretty much like that. Just the crap, you know, just...
This is never hit reply all on an email.
No. Not that crap. Like... These are the regions, and these are the territories, and these are how this is divided, and this is how the company's structured. And
don't ask why, it's just how it works.
Right. So, but, you know, solid company, although they're technological dinosaurs when it comes to their infrastructure, it was pretty ridiculous. Windows XP, which is not supported anymore, if I remember correctly.
I don't think it's been supported in a few years.
Lotus
Notes. But regardless, there's a whole bunch of people trained out there on XP.
Lotus Notes.
You know, technically, I have never used Lotus Notes. I've never worked in an office that used Lotus Notes, so I have nothing to complain about.
It's a vile, horrible, and disgusting application. Should never have seen the light of a CRT.
I know my wife used to use it when she worked for Banco Popular, and before that for CalFed.
My wife had to work with it for years in the legal field, but
never thought you'd be happy to use an Office, huh?
Oh yeah, Office 2003. It's like I thought I was bad rocking 07 over here, but I didn't like. I played with 2010. I didn't like it.
I was fine with it. I don't really use a POP server at home, so I don't have it installed. Yeah. I have it sitting there on a disk.
So in any case, we're doing something interesting here for the first one. When Brian read me the first sentence of this, I started to go off, and so I haven't read this article. Brian's getting ready to kind of.
Oh, okay, we're doing that one first.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
Out of order. No, we ended up doing it third.
Oh, I thought we were going to lead with that.
No, you wanted to
and then I read the shit.
You wanted to lead with Mustafa, and then you read what I wrote, and then you approved it.
Yeah, I'm fucking stupid.
And then we went to record, and all of a sudden you're changing the order up on me.
No. I already said that.
This
shit
is the height of professionality.
We can't change. Well, what do we just do? We just got done recording, fixing a fuck up where I was speaking the wrong.
You know, I don't
website.
Know if I can work in this environment.
When did you start working? All right. So what we have now is, in reality, not the third article, but the first article.
And this one for me was rather painful because on one level it made me realize I've been fucking wasting my life.
Well, not all of us can be child prodigies. Remember the name because you might see it again. Aisha Mustafa, a 19-year-old Egyptian physics student, patented a new type of propulsion system for spacecraft that uses cutting-edge quantum physics instead of thrusters.
Now let's stop there and examine just that first sentence for a minute.
Yeah.
Okay, this is coming out of Egypt.
Check.
B, it's patented.
Check.
C, by a woman.
Check.
19.
Gotcha.
19-year-old woman in Egypt has patented a quantum propulsion system. Like, if you take the Egyptian quotient out of that and you put it in, you know, some European or even, you know, Japan, maybe parts of China, I'd buy into the story, but I wouldn't really be like, hey, way to go, that's amazing. Someone coming out of Egypt doing this, like in this day and age, after everything that's been going on over there for this long, my hat is off to her.
Here's the deal.
You're missing
something here. So what actually happened was she happened to be the only one at Giza when one of the alien spacecraft came back.
That's not fair.
And we're
not allowed to talk about the...
You know, it landed on its docking port, you know, one of the pyramids, and she was able to see up close the drive.
Look, you know, we're not allowed to speak of the alien revelations, so if you don't stop it now, they're going to come in and stop you, and there's nothing I can do about it.
Well, I mean, that really, you know, just couldn't possibly happen, you know. Okay, so, all right, power tricks aside, mute buttons.
Yeah, you know, it was really funny because I was talking about this with my dad earlier, and I was reading him the description of the dynamic Casimir effect engine that she's described here. He's going, uh-huh, know that. Yeah, know that one. Okay, yeah, know that. You know, I know all of that. And I'm like, yeah, but neither one of us who know all of that put it all together like this little 19-year-old girl did.
Right.
In the middle of fucking Egypt.
Right. In the middle of a revolution.
In the middle of a revolution for the last 2 years now? So she's 19 now, say 17 when it started? I mean...
Well, like I said, she was out of Giza.
But, I mean, on aliens, the plus side, this is like winning American Idol. Everybody is going to be looking for her. Come to our country. We have research.
Yeah.
We have research facilities. We have the technological base. We can put your ideas to work.
Well, hopefully she's got more good stuff in there because she'll be well-funded. Moving forward. So basically what's going on here is there is one of the strange quantum facts at work in Mustafa's engine idea. There's no such thing as a vacuum devoid of particle waves and energy. There's always something really wherever we look.
They're popping in and out of existence all the time.
Right. And that's without us having discovered the Higgs boson, you know.
Which may or may not exist.
They're pretty sure it exists now. They're just narrowing it down.
Pretty sure, but they're not positive. Otherwise, they wouldn't still be looking for proof.
Right. Well, yeah. Hopefully they'll get it knocked out.
There's plenty of things we've inferred.
Well, hopefully they'll get it tied down before they shut down. There's upgrades going on at the end of the year. So, anyway,
regardless.
Moving back to this. There's particles and antiparticles and annihilate each other and pop in and out and so forth, throwing the whole first and second laws kind of. In a disarray. Thermodynamics, sorry. So she created a way of tapping this quantum effect via what's known as a dynamic Casimir effect. So basically you have a moving mirror cavity where two very reflective flat plates, I'm pretty much quoting from the article here. I have a basic understanding of the science involved, but not like a deep one.
I have a story that will make me sound smart, but only because I'm parroting it.
Row.
Yeah. The way this works can be demonstrated through a very simple experiment, apparently. I got this from my dad when I was talking to him earlier. Take like a bell jar and you suck the atmosphere out of it so you have as close as you can get to a vacuum.
Oh, yeah. I've totally got like a 2 or 3 micron vacuum pump laying around, like a mercury diffusion pump.
I'm just saying, if
like
you
that.
Happen to have the tools at hand and you can do this.
Yeah, I totally do.
You do that. And in the center of this vacuum filled
tube,
you put a small piece of paper. And the piece
of paper.
Where
the hell am I going to find a small piece of paper?
I don't know. You're going to have to place it in the tube before you remove the atmosphere. So keep that in mind. How in the fuck you get this thing suspended within this vacuum at the first place? I don't know. But apparently, once you're able to do this, you will see the piece of paper move from side to side based on this effect, where there's the heavier particles are on the, you know, there's more space for it to appear over here. So we'll start gravitating toward it. Gravitating is the wrong term. Anyway. But it's demonstrable if you can get a vacuum.
All right.
Yeah. So it works. I don't know how much thrust this thing generates. I haven't actually seen, I haven't gone and looked at the patent because A, I'm not an engineer, and B, I'm not a physicist. So, oh wait, all this does is take me to the Islam.
Well, the thing is, for certain applications...
Oh, hey, video.
Number one, for certain applications, it doesn't take a whole lot of thrust, because if you can keep the engines on for 5 years as you're trying to exit the solar system or whatnot, you can get going really fast.
Yeah, well, intersolar is going to be the ticket for a long time.
And the other thing is, a lot of times with these type of drives, if you can put them into an array and put 20 of them or 50 of them or 1,000 of them into an array at the back of a ship, now you've got, you know, if you've got 1,000 times a 0.01 G thrust every so often or however it
but
works.
Here we go again. I'm a little annoyed with these people in a case of bad journalism here. In the article that we were just quoting from, when it says patented a new type of propulsion system, the link there does not go to any actual patent. It goes to an article on the onislam.net page.
Where it says that she's got a patent?
Where it talks about, it's actually a much better description of the system, and it's got some video showing how it works. This one starts out, an Egyptian physics student has successfully created a new propulsion device that could accelerate space probes and artificial satellites through quantum physics and chemical reactions instead of the current radioactive-based jets and ordinary rocket engines. Aisha Mustafa, who has entered the active research area of spacecraft propulsion by her newly invented device, told the governmental news agency that she patented her invention last February in the Egyptian Academy of Scientific Research and Technology. Propelling devices based on a mix between quantum physics, space technology, chemical reactions, and electrical sciences.
Well, if we'd been a little more prepared, we might have watched this video to see if the audio portion of it was enough to...
If we had been. Like I said, I just thought it was a link to the patent, so I had not followed it at that point.
Well, who wants to read a fucking patent? I mean, sometimes, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I was looking through, and the references have nothing to do with it, so... Yeah.
Not well, enough
maybe
info,
we can
but...
find that, you know. Maybe we can find that Egyptian agency online. Or perhaps one of our listeners is Egyptian. Perhaps. And they could go to...
I have an Egyptian friend, but I don't think he's listening. He's a pretty busy guy.
I'm sure we got listeners from all over.
All right. So the next thing we've got going on here is a... It's actually from the Scientific American, from the blog section of the Scientific American...
Where the author, I think, is entirely right to be righteously angered.
Yeah, he seems angry. Maybe he's angry as I am. I'm not sure. So here's what's going on. North Carolina, in their constant battle over the past 10 years or so with Kansas and Arizona mainly, has really put themselves out front yet again this week. Actually, it was actually last week. I thought about putting this in a week ago, and I just didn't.
Oh, you're right. This is dated back on the 30th. But
so basically, Amendment 1. I know. I'm sorry.
Oh, see, I'd actually skipped over that portion of it. I'm like, yeah, Amendment 1's old news.
Right. That's what we know them for so far. Sorry, I'm skipping through to the part of the article we need here. In a story first discussed by the North Carolina Coastal Federation and given more play May 29th by the News and Observer of Rahway and the Charlotte Observer, a group of legislators from 20 coastal North Carolina counties whose economies will be most affected by rising seas have legislated the words "nuh-uh" into the North Carolina Constitution.
If I may quote, sea level policy restrictions, calculation of rate of sea level rise. No state agency, board, commission, institution, or other public entity thereof shall adopt any rule, policy, or planning guideline addressing sea level rise unless authorized to do so under this article. B. No county, municipality, or other local public body shall adopt any rule, ordinance, policy, or planning guideline addressing sea level rise unless it is a coastal area county or is located within a coastal area county. C. No rule, ordinance, planning, blah, 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 that defines the rate of sea level rise shall be adopted except as provided by this section.
Yeah.
skipping a bit, does not intend to mandate the development of sea level rise policy or rates of sea level rise. If, however, the Coastal Resources Commission decides to develop rates of sea level rise, the commission may do so, but only by instructing the Division of Coastal Management to calculate the rates. The Division of Coastal Management shall be the only state agency authorized to develop rates of sea level rise and shall do so only at the request of the commission. These rates shall only be determined using historical data, and these data shall be limited to the time period following the year 1900. Rates of sea level rise may be extrapolated linearly to estimate future rates of rise, but shall not include scenarios of accelerated rates of sea level rise.
Right. So what they have to do is they have to try and draw a line between dots on a graph that form a curve, a pronounced curve.
I love how they made it illegal for anyone else to perform such a test.
Well, to perform even the calculations. They're talking about development of rates of sea level rise. That doesn't require new measurements. Like, you could be working with the measurements that are already in existence, and you could be plotting a graph and maybe connecting the dots.
Can you imagine how this is
going to
work for, you know, developers over the next couple of years? So, you want me to build this coastal property, do you?
Yes.
What's the rate of sea level rise there?
It's linear.
You can't tell me? Haven't you performed a test? What do you mean the state hasn't performed a test? Why wouldn't the state perform a test? What's the latest sea level rise going to be around here?
They're not allowed to. Oh.
Well, sir, they performed a test approximately 5 years ago.
They've intentionally put blinders on the scientific community and say, "Yeah,
there's
I don't
no
know
way you could possibly deviate from this kind of graph we've extrapolated."
I don't know how they're gonna. I don't know how they're gonna bald face sit there and.
I've seen some hairy
do business
horseshit
with us.
This one bursts into flames all by itself. You know?
Yeah, so we can hope, because this isn't actually put in a law yet, right?
You know what? I don't know if this passed.
This is replacement House Bill 819.
It's dated from the 25th, but that may just been when this was pulled or introduced. Originally the 7th, so I don't know what it changed or updated, but. Yeah, unfortunately, again, yeah, great research on our part. Nobody's followed up on this in the last week.
Yeah, I don't think that this is. I think this is something they're trying to get done. I don't think this is actually in effect yet, but they're really making strides. I mean, between the gay marriage, and this is one backwards ass state, and it sucks because I've heard the barbecue is really good. Wait a minute.
The article really makes it sound like this has already passed.
Is there some sort of a correlation there? Really good barbecue and really fucked up, wacko, anti-science views? Do you have to be anti-science to make good barbecue, maybe?
I don't think so, because, you know, Mission Control was in Texas.
Right, but maybe Mission Control couldn't barbecue up some pig.
I bet you there's some really old NASA employees are coming to kick your ass right now.
Oh, man, if we had NASA employees listening to this, showing up for that, I'd be so stoked. Please come and kick my ass. It'd be an honor.
Please burn a cross on his lawn.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, but.
Look, if they're old Texas and they're barbecuing.
Yeah, but I mean, think about my family makeup, man. We don't want anything burning on our lawn at all.
I've also seen your level of yard work.
Hey, it's improved recently. I got my shit fixed. My lawnmower and my weed whacker were dead.
Oh, really?
They didn't work, so I had to get them both repaired.
Well, like, I have any way to talk, and I got 3 dirt planters around my place.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, but either way, I'd be able to record the level of sea rise in my fucking planters, unlike these poor bastards in North Carolina.
poor bastards.
Move there. I bet you they've got really low taxes.
I mean,
because Jesus hates taxes.
Yeah, you guys gotta move out. Apparently he hates it when people eat too. I was listening to Cognitive Dissonance, and they were talking about these people, including the former presidential candidate, the governor, Texas governor, Rick Perry. holding a prayer and fasting, mm-hmm. calling for people to prayer and fast. And they yes. posed an interesting question. I thought it was really good. People listen. This is actually the week before last episode, mm-hmm. folks, and listen to them all, but listen all right. to this one especially.
I'm ready. What's the question?
The question.
And this is related to prayer and fasting.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. So the question is, when was the last time you were having an argument or discussion with somebody and you just weren't getting anywhere with the argument? And so you decided the most convincing thing you could say to help you with that argument was, well, you know what? I didn't eat lunch. Like, what difference does it make when you're pleading? Like, does God not want you to eat? Like, what difference does it make if
yes,
you're pleading?
Yes, because they're acting based off the example of many Old Testament characters who, in their desire to get a response from God, would purify their bodies by not eating.
Was that before or after they broke down and decided to make another golden calf?
Yes. And which calf, I might add.
I mean, it's just...
Don't forget, these guys get kicked around all over the place. There was plenty of times when they were and were not worshiping God. Don't get me wrong there. But they also do in the New Testament.
Right.
So it's not like they're, you know, coming up on this wacko shit on their own. This is actually established wacko shit. Which, of course, as, you know, a devoutly fundamentalist born-again child, I went through myself.
How fun was that?
It was great. You know, the Sundays where you wouldn't eat because God didn't want you to. I loved them.
I just
well, of
don't.
Of course, that's not entirely fair because the parents would never let the kids go all day without eating, even if they would. But you'd try to be a good Christian and say, no, I'm not going to eat. I'm gonna fast too.
Right.
And then they go, shut the hell up, you're a child and growing. Eat this. I'm like, thank you for not being completely psycho.
I guess. I guess you got to try and find a bright side there.
Yeah, well, yeah.
All right, so let's get on with this gotcha broadcast.
All right, this one just cracked me up. It wasn't necessarily supposed to be a gotcha. You just wouldn't let me finish reading the article because you were dying of laughter halfway through the first sentence.
I know.
Okay, so I was perusing the intertubes the other day, and I came across this this line in an article, and it was just one line. And that line, when I read it, was, where'd it go? Oh, damn it. It was not, oh, where'd it go? Oh, damn it. But instead.
Was it the headline?
No, it's not quite the headline. It's inspired by the words of a revered rabbi who prophesied that precious stones were divinely buried in the area. The diamond firm Shefa Yamim has been mining for about a decade along the steep hills and lush valleys that surround the city of Haifa. And I got that far, and Matt already had about four objections to the sentence beginning with, have they found any diamonds? Are there any diamonds? What happened to the diamonds?
Well, I mean, this article makes it really wishy-washy. The first and only diamond explorer in Israel says it has found strong signs that a significant diamond deposits are indeed hidden in the Holy Land, surprising many who would dismiss the mission as a pipe dream. They've been digging for 10 years, and from what I can tell, they've found not even a handful of fairly good-sized diamonds. They look like they're just crap.
Yeah, I went back. They had a report in 2001 where they'd found four diamond flakes.
Flakes
in a core sample.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, you can't even work with that. You need really, I don't know.
Okay.
It's here's the thing. Diamonds aren't rare, number one. Number two, the diamond industry is already like bought and paid for. I mean, it's owned, right? Like mm-hmm. the whole De Beers thing.
De Beers owns all of it, unless they're blood diamonds, and then, you know. How are they different from
and then
other
De Beers
jewelry?
Owns them too, under a name of a subsidiary that's bought under a holding company that's held in the anyway.
Yeah. Regardless, that wasn't even the funny part yet, but that's where you lost it in laughter.
Okay.
So continuing from the snippets I put together, in 1999, Taub founded Shefa Yamim, which means bounty of the seas in Hebrew, based on a conversation that took place 11 years earlier in Brooklyn, New York, between the late Rabbi Menachem Schneerson and then mayor of Haifa. The dialogue was caught on video. Many of Schneerson's followers believe him to be the Messiah, making the comments a decree of sorts, and Taub answered the call.
So this guy is the Messiah now?
The Messiah prophesied there were diamonds.
So are the diamonds going to help him to lead the Jews to victory over their enemies? If I remember correctly, the Old Testament quote.
Well, you would admit having, you know, their own diamond mines in Israel wouldn't hurt, if for nothing else than industrial production. Yeah.
I suppose it might be some cash, but like I said, the market's already kind of dominated. You know what I mean? It's already basically cornered.
Well, I'll say, you know, competition's always good. You know, yo-yo capitalism.
That's not competition. That's a stranglehold. It's a monopoly.
Yeah, but you're forgetting the Messiah told them so.
Well, no.
In Brooklyn.
Yeah. No. The Messiah didn't say shit. The Messiah is...
The Messiah told them in Brooklyn that there were diamonds in the hills.
But the Messiah is a fictional character from a book written
by... No, the Messiah is Menachem Schneerson. It said so.
So saith the illiterate goat herder who thought that slavery was cool.
No, so saith the combined Jews of, I don't know, whoever elected him Messiah in Brooklyn and then made him mayor of Haifa. Now, if I were mayor of a desert city, I too might proclaim that the Lord had told me there were diamonds in the nearby hills.
I might.
If I were mayor and Messiah, just think of the tax breaks.
Oh, wait, so the mayor is supposed to be the Messiah?
I believe so.
I thought the mayor was hanging out with the Messiah.
See, it's hard to tell with the way that sentence is formed.
No, it took place between the late Rabbi Menachem Schneerson and the mayor of Haifa. Menachem Schneerson was the guy who had...
So he's not the mayor?
No.
They are two separate people.
Well, how do you have a conversation? Unless he's fucking...
Because Taub...
Spoiler alert, folks. Unless he's fucking Tyler Durden, yeah.
Because Taub, the Orthodox Jew who works for Shivam Yamim and founded them, is talking to the late rabbi. And the way I had read it, the rabbi was also happened to be the mayor of Haifa. But you're... interpretation could be equally correct, if not more. But I'm saying that's how I initially would have made that interpretation.
Okay, so Taub is the guy that started this company. He's the Orthodox Jew.
He's the Orthodox Jew who wears a skull cap and a long white beard.
Right. Okay, so he did this because of a conversation that took place 11 years earlier between the late rabbi Menachem Schneerson. Oh, wait, now wait a minute. If he's the late rabbi, he can't have been the Messiah because the Jews would have defeated all their enemies.
No. The Messiah is not there to defeat all their enemies. He's there to liberate them.
But no, I thought that's why they didn't buy the whole Jesus thing was because they. I thought.
Well, exactly, they were expecting a military liberator.
Right.
That's my understanding too. That's why they.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Defeat enemies, liberate. You know.
Yeah, but not all of them. They've got a country right now. What do they need with the Messiah?
Are there Arabs living? The Messiah has not yet landed. I think that's what they're getting at. There are still Arabs around that are trying to destroy Israel. So therefore, the Messiah has not yet been around.
Yeah, I don't know if that's how it's... Not that big a deal. You're right.
So, fine. So, if this guy was a Messiah and he's now dead, he clearly wasn't a Messiah. So why would they still be doing shit as if he was in some way special?
Yeah, I don't know if there's only a singular Messiah.
What?
Messiah is kind of a position. I don't know if there's only one of them. Because these guys get in and out of trouble all the time.
I don't know. I can't keep...
That's just general. You know, I'm not positive how that term gets used these days.
No, I think there's one Messiah, but...
Because I know, you know, Messiahs keep popping up all the time. I know there was a big one in the 1400s whose name escapes me.
And that whole David Koresh thing.
Yeah, but he wasn't really Jewish, per se. That wasn't a little Jewish sect. That was a weird Christian sect. He may have happened to be of Jewish descent, but... I think that was secondary to his faith.
Could be. All right, so that one was just kind
of... Which is kind of weird and funny, because going through their reports, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of diamonds being found. Lots of other kinds of gems. Apparently, they're doing really well on that front, but...
Oh, yeah, lots of garnet and stuff. Great. Yeah. That's going to be fantastic for your market in... Export of bridge jewelry, of costume jewelry. You know, maybe you can get some turquoise in there and you can start to really compete with the New Mexican and Arizona and Southwestern topaz and sterling silver.
Here's a telling paragraph for you. Chef Yamim's consultant geochemist, Mark Fetikow of Mount Morgan Resources in Winnipeg, Canada, believes its success, its chance for success are as high as 20 to 30%.
Wow.
Due to the abundance of mineral indicators. 20 to 30%.
Amazing. That's
could reach a point of production in 3 to 5 years.
Invest now.
Yeah, wow. Let's get into the bottom, bargain basement there. But the Messiah told us we have to. What else can we do?
All right, so once again, we have a bonus article this week. We desperately needed it because none of you want to talk to us, and we don't have any feedback. How could we, since we haven't?
Since we failed to put up last week's
episode, yeah. It'd be pretty ridiculous for us to have feedback on an episode that you hadn't heard yet. So the bonus this week is an article from Yahoo News.
Well, and it's an AP piece.
Okay. Yahoo News, AP via Yahoo News. And so basically they're talking about how in 2008, Barack Obama took aim at the Pew Gap, which has to do with, the Republican edge among people who identify at least as regularly attending church. I don't think there's any mystery to anybody who listens to this show that there is this whole religious right phenomenon, and there are a large number of conservative Christian Republicans that Tea Party people, that kind of.
I object to the Tea Party being included in that because I really don't see where their platform had much to do other than their tax platform.
Their platform didn't have to do with jack or shit because they were idiots. But if you look at, for example, meetup.com,
tax reform.
They just wanted to make sure that they and their rich friends didn't pay any more, any closer to their fair share.
They didn't want anyone paying taxes.
Yeah, that's what the country needs right now, you dumbasses. That's what we need less taxes being paid. That's how you're going to get us out of this. So. Anyway,
lower tax rates are consistently shown to increase revenues.
Right. So the point here is of the article is basically talking about whether Obama is going to lose Republican crossover votes, or if he's losing people who fall into this.
What do they call it? Moderate religious group.
Right. And to me, I don't see this being a big issue, and here's why. I think that with some of the recent moves that he's made, with the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and scaling down our presence and doing all that stuff, I think that he's really managed to stabilize his support among the among the liberals and the progressives and the Democrats in general. I don't think that the Republican candidate stands a chance because I think that when it comes to his recent move with the endorsing gay marriage, finally, thank you, I think that he's going to get way more gay Republicans to move over to his side than he's going to lose ultra-religious, gay-hating, or homophobic.
Well, you can tell this is an issue he cares a lot about because he's appointed a 24-year-old with no experience to head his like religious outreach program.
Right. What a fucktard. I wish this shit weren't necessary, but I know somebody is telling him how necessary it is. Here's the thing. I'm really starting to think the more people I talk to, I know that I'm realizing more and more what a skewed view I get out there in the social media because as everyone's well aware, but sometimes you have trouble putting into proportion. The people who are out there yelling and screaming on the inner tubes are not typical. They're not the everyday, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the more people I talk to and the more things I read about how communities are reacting to certain activities and stimuli and so forth, the more it makes me think that there are a lot of people who are just going because they don't want to make their mom cry. They really just don't want to. I mean, all their friends go and they've got... they're tied into the community, and there's a whole bunch of different reasons why.
And you know what? That's been a consistent complaint since the first church was ever formed.
That's not a complaint.
Yeah. No, it's been, it is a complaint. It's very much so a complaint, even if you're just going to say it's a description or... Yeah. But you're still complaining that these people are doing it for, solely for those reasons. you know, that they shouldn't, that they should stick to their guns and just not go.
Well, I'm not complaining in that sense. I'm just pointing it out because I don't think that he has anywhere near as much to worry about as even his advisors might indicate.
Yeah, this is, like I said, this is the best line in this article. Until he joined the campaign, 24-year-old Michael Ware was an executive assistant in the faith-based and neighborhood partnerships office. Yeah.
Wow.
Now he's national director for religious outreach.
How the fuck? I mean, who did he blow?
Snap.
No, I mean, seriously, who did he blow? Because I'll.
Yeah, how's that for a promotion?
Yeah. I mean, no kidding. I'll get some knee pads, man. I've never tried, but I'm sure I could figure it out. I mean, I've had enough of them. I might be able to figure out how to. I mean, come on. I listened to Jay Moore's podcast called Moore Stories. And at this one point, he's talking about Charlie Sheen and what's the guy that runs that show?
The guy that runs that show, Chuck.
Chuck Lorre.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's talking about, what exactly was it? Somebody was asking wondering what was it that, and he's like, what difference does it make what it was? Like, what could it be? Like, he was making $2 million an episode. There was an episode every fucking week, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you get called in, you say, listen, here's the deal. You're getting paid $2 million an episode. You got to come in and do a sitcom comedy. You're going to work for, 30, 40 hours out of that week. Tops.
Tops.
You know what I mean? It's become old hat at this point. It's you know what I mean? It's nothing for you. $2 million an episode. Here's the bad news. Every day that you're on set, right before you go on scene, you got to blow Chuck Lorre. And you're going, okay, so where's the bad news, right? Because it's like, it's $2 million an episode, right? I mean, if I had to blow a couple donkeys now, you're...
And I'll be honest, I've watched his shows. He's not really acting all that hard.
I haven't seen it, but I haven't, yeah, I mean...
It was never my favorite show before or after he was on it, and I've caught a couple of episodes, and it's more him being him than he is really, acting the role.
Right, right.
That's how you make $2 million, is by being yourself.
Right. I knew a child, so that's why he wouldn't blow Chuck Lorre's, because he's like, I'm not even having that fucking act here if I get $2 million an episode. It's like, tell you what, why don't you knock it down to $1.5 million and let me fuck around with my porn star and stripper girlfriends. And
you stay out of my arrangements and I'll come and you can film me.
Right. So, yeah, let me talk shit about you whenever I feel like it. So in any case, moving on, trying to get back, I should say, to Obama here. I just don't see it as having a big impact. I think that I think this article is probably...
Yeah, this is like a 3-page article where they go on about all the different things that the various churches took as attacks in the last year.
Do they say, as usual, the only relevant thing in the article in the last paragraph or two?
Essentially gets down there, yeah, like that... That bit about the kid is somewhere in the... No. Wow, good Lord.
It's not that long.
Oh, no. Sorry, it's all the crap at the end that makes it look longer than it is. But, yeah, it's about halfway through before they mention the kid.
That's what they do try and tie it up at the end. It's like there are some people in the religious community who are unsure, Thompson said. I think they need to be brought to the table. That's what you're getting at this article. I mean, there's just nothing really else to say about it, and they blab on for what's got to be, 600-800 words here?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, there were like 4 things of interest in this entire thing. Yeah. These,
it's interesting content, and they still couldn't come up with anything.
Yeah, they couldn't put it together well. I absolutely agree.
All right.
Sorry, Rachel.
Yeah. Learn to content. Okay, so that takes us to the topic of interest for the week.
I get to start this week, and mine is something I've known about and actually used over the years. Bain is one of my favorite science fiction and fantasy publishers. They published some of my favorite series over the years, including Lois McBaster Bujold's Vorkosigan series, David Weber's Honor Harrington series, his fantasy series, guys like Eric Flint. And a few years ago, when online piracy first became a big hot button issue for everybody, they made a decision. And Eric Flint wrote up their basically thesis or mission statement. And their belief is, we're putting the entire catalog online free.
Right.
You can come in, you can download it, you can read it. We've got it in a bunch of different formats. And we're doing this because we have research that consistently shows, and since they started doing this, their sales have shown that reading one title gets you interested in the author's other works and back catalog, and the person generally goes back and buys those titles.
Well, right. Like, I've got an author that I've read a ton of stuff by that writes a sort of sci-fi, literally sci-fi fantasy, like not just as a category, but it's literally like science fiction space, but also fantasy. And
yeah, like Star Wars.
Yeah, that the alien race has, you know, some telepathic powers and shit. So he has a new book coming out that's like a prequel, but clearly starting a new trilogy, at least, on top of a trilogy plus a few books that kind of got woven in on the series. And I think it's been a year or two since the last book came out.
Okay.
And so he put the first book out, or the first two books in like this five books that he has so far put together on the same subject.
Okay.
Or in the same universe. Put those two out for free. Like if you sign up for his notifications on his blog, subscribe to his blog or something like that, easy, right? You know? And, you know, and I commented on this, you know, it's brilliant because you're going to get hooked. I actually commented, you know, you're going to get hooked on these. Like I was halfway through the first book and I knew I was going to have the next two and finish out the trilogy. It's good stuff, compelling characters, you know.
Right on.
So.
Yeah. Like, they have authors in here, and these are just some of the ones I've liked over the years. That include, like I said, Bujold, Jeffrey Carver. David Drake is in here. He wrote Hammer Slammers. I don't know if you read that. Linda Evans, Eric Flint. I really enjoy a lot of Eric Flint stuff. Not necessarily his collaborations with other people, but some of his original works, like, the collaboration where he did, what was that? The Philosophical Strangler was a brilliant book. I still read that every, you know, at least once a year. Let's see who else is on here. David Weber, Katie Wentworth, Harry Turtledove. He writes a lot of alternative history novels. Larry Niven, Andre Norton, who just passed away recently, Cherry Pournelle. Larry Niven made Dyson Spheres, or actually Ringworlds, famous back in the 70s before Halo did for the, you know, the 2000s.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's just the authors. Their total books, I think, are somewhere in the range of 300 now. They're just sitting on here. No, I guess they go through it. And then they got a number of different series if you want to divide it up that way. So you can see which books are in the library and which are not. Oh, so there's finally a, like, here's one I read on here, Doc She. I read this years ago, and now I find out there's a sequel. So good to go.
Awesome.
Yeah, and then every once in a while, oh, no, I guess they stopped doing that a few years ago. Yeah, Flint was in charge of the library for a long time. But yeah, if you enjoy science fiction or fantasy and you ever just want to read a book for free, go to, now it's, what are we going to call it? Bain.com/library.
That's BAEN.
Yeah. Oh, I also wanted to mention that they also provide a reading guide for teacher's guides to various books. So for supplemental reading for English courses, they've got ones that cover everything from The Rolling Stones by Robert Heinlein to Basilisk Station by David Weber, a bunch of stuff in between, and going back for a couple of years. And they're free out to the teaching community.
Free is good?
Free is always good.
Especially when it comes to going to the teaching community and such. All right. Well, my topic of interest of the week is one that we've been discussing a little bit before the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I did propose, I'm putting this out there as my topic of interest, not as something that's like, oh, hey, this is going to be awesome. this is something that is interesting, and it seems like it's somewhat well fleshed out, but parts of it seem like it may be lacking in some background here.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about it. I can't exactly put my finger on it, but it makes me feel like a leery investor.
Yeah.
Like, why do you want my money so much? And I can understand why they want money. I mean, it's an ambitious project.
Mm-hmm.
But something about it makes the hair stand up just a little bit. When I look at their stuff, I go, it runs the gamut from hand-drawn pictures to nicely done graphics. I don't know what they're trying to say with their website. I guess maybe that's part of it. I mean, the idea and the mission statement behind it and what looks like a good development plan is buoyed by the fact that they did like a year's worth of research.
Well, I mean, they are counting on a lot of the components being, you know, relatively similar to stuff that we've done before, I think. Mm. But I think it's still pretty you know, pretty ambitious in terms of their time frame.
Absolutely.
Based on the complexity of the plan. But let's get to the nitty gritty here. We're talking about, and I think I've mentioned this possibility in the past, that, that people have mused and surmised that one of the most difficult things about getting, we talked about this with the Enterprise project, mm-hmm. build the Enterprise project, I should say. One of the things that's most difficult about getting a manned mission to Mars is getting a spacecraft out of Earth's gravity well with enough fuel on it to, number one, take care of that, and then, number two, get itself out of Mars's gravity well.
Well, if we want to come back.
Exactly. And so I'd heard people, I'd heard it mentioned before, I think maybe on Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, or, and you have a number of places, science-type things that I listen to and read, that one thing, that this was as much as 90%, I think I heard one estimate, of the total energy expenditure required to get out of, total development that we required, or effort, or whatever, like 90% of the total work involved in getting the mission total done would be basically figuring out how to get all the stuff out there to get these people back. And these people kind of at least postpone that. And I think that's one of the points that I want to make about these guys, is that they're saying that they are going to establish a human settlement.
Are they going to be fertile? Or are they all going to be, you know, are they going to have contraceptive implants?
It'll have to be at the beginning, because they won't have life support for any more people until more.
Even if they do, how could... All right, let's get back first and describe what their settlement is going
to
be.
Yeah, so here's what we're talking about. They want to send, they've got a timeline here. That's probably the best way to go about this. They call it the roadmap, and under the mission section, this can be found at mars-1.com. So 2011, throughout 2011, Mars 1 worked on the Mars mission in secret. So they contacted suppliers for the required components. All potential suppliers were enthused by an apolitical commercial manned mission to Mars and confirmed their ability to produce the parts when needed. I'm sure they, of course, were also assuming...
They have letters of intent, damn it.
That's what they claim. And I'm also assuming that they're assuming there's some kind of money involved. They usually want some sort of cash dough type, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, 2013, so now we're talking about next year. They want to talk about astronaut selection. They want to talk about the first four humans on Mars and who are to follow every 2 years after. There'll be a total of 40 astronauts, they say.
So that means 20 trips, right?
Right. They want to...
Did I say 20? No, 10.
10 trips. They want to build a replica...
I'd be a high school graduate.
There may be... they want to build a replica of the settlement on Earth in the desert to help the astronauts prepare and train. And then 2014.
Now, here's a good point. Go back to the 2013 one.
Okay.
This looks like something from the, you know, the Thunderbirds in the 50s.
Yeah. It is interesting.
Like, I expect the ground in front of it to open up and, like, you know, Thunderbird 1 is going to take off or something. It's like a weird modeling. Like
computer. Yeah.
Computer, is that a computer generated, or is that an actual model miniature? Is that an actual miniature?
No, I think that's computer generated.
But, I could definitely say some of the surrounding areas definitely photoshopped.
Right. 2014, they're talking about preparations for the supplies mission due to launch a couple years later, which is basically getting all this stuff together, as well as production of the first Mars communication satellite. They want to get a satellite up there so that the comms will be a little bit easier back to Earth.
Makes sense to me.
Supply mission will be launched for Mars in January 2016, land on the Red Planet October 2016 with its cargo of 2,500 kg of food.
Four people, 2,500 kilograms of food.
Right. Then
that's a lot of energy bars.
2 years later, a robotic exploration vehicle will land on Mars to join the supply lander. So this is, you know, sort of a robot rover. The rover's task is to travel around the planet to determine the most favorable location for the settlement. As always, you'll be able to join it on its mission thanks to the live video being streamed back to Earth. They plan on financing this, by the way, with a huge media event that will, of course, accompany it, and then live broadcasting.
And then live streaming the entire time they're building it.
And setting, yeah, and marketing that, I'm assuming.
Yeah, no, so. I'm all for space exploration. I am not all for, you know, documentaries on how it was built live.
Right.
Look, the rover fucked up. You see that? It fucked up. Yeah.
Right. Here's one question I have real quick. So one of the, the first supply craft is going to land in 2016. Mm-hmm. And in 2018, the rover is going to find the best place for the settlement to be.
Okay.
So what? How are they going to get that first? Because all the pictures show six of these capsules.
If you blow that picture up, there's a tow hitch.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that the rover was capable of towing the landing craft.
Come on, two rovers are supposed to manipulate these fucking landing craft into a straight line, connect all the tubing and the wiring all by themselves.
I'm not sure
before
how
people
all that's
get there.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. So there's some holes in here. There's another thing that I was thinking about. If they're going to be financing this thing, and I kind of mentioned this, they're going to be financing things. This is the first thing that crossed my mind.
I'm just using waiting for the first more like kind of a marketing call.
Yeah, exactly. If it's like a reality show, like what do they do when the ratings start to drop?
I don't know. You got to kick somebody out of the habitat.
Exactly.
What the hell? I've got no oxygen out here. You know what the atmosphere is like? I'll explode.
Yeah. I just, it all gets, and what happens if there's like some crazy wars going on here or some sort of apocalypse back here. Like, yeah.
I don't know where the image went, but if you get out to their full extension, when they get out to, what is it, 2035 or something like that?
2025?
Well, that's the last one on here. I thought I saw an image somewhere else where it was like, it's rows of these capsules.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so that's our first human settlement.
Well, in 2025, the second group lands.
But how can you have children in this environment? This is not an environment that's designed with.
Yeah, I don't think it is.
It's not. I guess it's a difference between a habitat and a colony. There's no room for growth. There's no ability for growth.
Yeah, I think that they'd have to very quickly start working on trying to find resources that would allow them to replicate any of the technology that it would take for them to live on the planet. I just don't see how. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's going to take something like the Enterprise project where you go out there with
hundreds of
people.
Where you got a lot of people. Yeah, that's.
And I think the ability for those people to come and go is going to make it a lot easier for you to get people to sign up for 5-year contracts where they go out there and spend 5 years living in a spacesuit, for fuck's sake. And
now, that's
to build
something I could see. Like, if you're rotating out and you're there for a short period and you know, temporary sterilization or whatever while you rotate through, fine.
Yeah, I mean, think about with the Enterprise project. If we could get something similar to that going, a craft that never entered the atmosphere that was capable of a 3-month
But even then, where's the recreational areas in here? You've got gravity. It's not like you're in zero G. There's space for playing.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. With a big massive ship, you can bring out larger components. You can start to set up some real. You could start launching, especially if you had things like something we touched on last week.
You're a little heavy for what you need for Mars, but
with the space tram that we're talking about last week, basically railgun shooting a train car into space with a bunch of cargo in it. Maybe we could have something up there that could dock with it. That could basically provide the thrust to kick it out into an approximation of Mars orbit where it could be picked up, and you start dumping supplies out there dirt cheap and get the materials in place to start building. If we're going to colonize Mars, I mean, is there a case to be made for why we should be colonizing Mars?
I guess my biggest
Mars
complaint
right
is they're not thinking big enough with this.
Yeah, I can see that. I think they're making a couple mistakes here. I think they're making a mistake with the plan on financing it with media. I think they're making a mistake with the with making it so that the people are planning on never coming back. If they get people that are relatively young,
this is something that would work in a story.
Right. Yeah. But you know what I mean? I mean, I think that if you're just saying, well, listen, let's just put that part of the mission off and assume that in 20 years, it's likely that we'll have the technology to get people back, but they're at least going out there for that long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see where this would work if we had like one world government and that's how they were going to support it. They were going to force the broadcast on their networks and, make a big hoopla out of it. Like, who will be the 40?
Right. Oh, they'd have
make
to.
Make big competitions out of it.
Yeah.
Oh, did you see him fuck up on the written physics exam?
All right. So with that, we're actually drawing pretty good up on time. So I think we ditch it.
You think we ditch it?
I think we ditch it. It's becoming a trend. We don't have, even though we don't have a lot of follow-up or any follow-up or feedback, we're at 55 minutes right now.
An hour's not bad.
Yeah.
I just wanted to look real quick since I want to go down there.
Let's take it out real quick.
Xbox getting new technology.
That is not our show.
PlayStation mobile teams with HTC for mobile gaming greatness.
What are you looking into your fucking geek news? Come on,
I'm
man.
I'm at the bottom of the Google News page. I'm going down to look at the science section. Transit of Venus. This one sounded neat. NASA gets two large telescopes from the Department of Defense. Both apparently stronger than Hubble.
I just saw that one. That's always nice to know. They've probably been pointing downward.
They've been pointing downward for years. Yeah. Now, the fucking New Yorkers screwed up the fucking Enterprise.
Yeah, I know.
Damn, it's doing water transport.
Yes. Yeah, it's pretty shitty.
Probably somebody from Queens.
There's just like the first, we were going for the first three. I don't even know if we were admitting that, but we were going through the first three.
Yeah, trying to find
the first three is just fucking ridiculous.
It's horrendous tonight. I don't want to talk about Romney.
Yeah, I see.
I don't want to talk about the Queen of England.
I say we just kick this shit. It's getting hot in here. We've had a good show so far. No major fuck-ups. We can get out of here 56 minutes, 57 minutes by the time we get done blabbing.
Everyone will be happy. It'll make up for going over time on those early episodes.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, all right. So give us some feedback, please, so we won't have to have so much news next time and have no second half of the show, which is the only real evergreen part of the show. I mean, the topics of interest, I guess, kind of are.
Yeah.
That's part of our second half, too, but... we really like it when we have lots of communication from you guys. I want to reiterate the number because the lovely British man, we didn't have it when the lovely British man did our intros and outro for us. So use our Google Voice number. God damn it, you sons of bitches. Area code 657. That's in the Orange County of Southern California, not in Guyana. 657-210-1237. How could you not be able to remember that? 210-1237. There's so many ones and twos in there. And then 01237. I mean, how awesome is that? I mean, obviously 01234 would have been better, but it wasn't available, clearly. So deal.
I always thought it was Guyana.
Is it Guyana?
I don't know. That's what I always thought it was.
I don't know. I always read it as Guyana.
That's just where all the porn calls went.
Yeah, we both used to work for a phone company. That's actually where we met. It was at a long-distance phone company. And most
that
of the time...
That was actually an awesome place to work, you got to admit.
Well, it was awesome until they got the largest fine in California Public Utilities Commission history.
Well, it was still fined at that point. It was still cool to work there. It was just, poisoned and dying.
Well, it wasn't cool to work there once you realized that the sales force was signing up the customer base off of gravestones.
Oh, that was absolutely horrible. That's what I'm saying. It was a great place to work. You never knew what the fuck was going to happen.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. We had those investigative news reporter people showed up one time to one of the sales meetings, which is not the place I wanted to show up for a sales meeting. That was stupid, showing up when all the sales reps were there. It was crazy. Cool people, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we still talked to some people that we met through there. Several people that we met through there.
People who contributed to this show.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the music you're hearing is from people. Some of the comments you've had, feedback that we've had is from early on, especially with some people we met through the show. And we're talking about having one of our friends from there do a segment or two with us coming up here pretty quick if we ever get that stuff together. By the way, C-Web, we're sorry we realized we hadn't followed up with you. I've got crazy home stuff. I'll email you about it. I've got crazy family stuff going on and all kinds of stuff like that that's been sucking up all my time. But now
should be free evenings, so it'll be easier.
It'll be perfect with your schedule. So,
and you can defend your home state there.
Yes, because Brian's been bagging. So, again, thanks, everybody. We really appreciate you listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks again.
Please download and listen with any device and software you like, but if you can, subscribe in iTunes. It really helps us out. Our website is broadlyfocused.com. Our Twitter feed is @broadlyfocused. Matt's personal feed is @godlessmatt. And then there's facebook.com/broadlyfocused. You can find our LinkedIn profile.